comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us for the very first time tonight, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. You need to know, if you're new, we have a free weekly newsletter. It is called the K-Files E-Zine, and you just go over to kevinsmithshow.com. You'll see the button on the screen there. It says K-Files E-Zine. Just click that and subscribe. You're in, and you will no longer be a mushroom in the dark. You need to know something about tonight's show. Later, you know, in each show, in the second hour, we open it for phone calls. And so here lately, the regular telephone line, you know, supplied by the telephone company has been really noisy. And so here's what we've done for tonight. This is a test tonight. It's a different number, and it's a different type of phone system. So what we're going to do, I put it in great big letters up on the screen, on the website, big numbers. But let me give you the number. You can write it down. This is going to be, if you try to call in tonight, this is the number. Okay, the other number, we're not answering tonight. It works, but we're not answering it. All right, here's the number for tonight. It is 1-602-539-3316. 602-539-3316. Now, I'll be giving that number later, but you know, go ahead and write it down, then you'll have it. And just a reminder, you know, before you spend all that money on expensive gasoline, and it is expensive, even though it's gone down a little bit, it's very expensive. So before you spend all that money on expensive gasoline to traipse around town shopping, why not check out the Kevin Smith Show Mall, the KSS Mall? It's right there on my site. You deal directly with the merchants, and they are big-time, big-name merchants. You save money on all kinds of products and services, and you can put all that gas money back in your pocket. You don't have to, you know, spend all that gas money to traipse around looking for this computer part or that cable or this new game. You know, even popcorn, you can get popcorn at our mall. Yeah, I'm not kidding. Steaks, too. Clothes. Electronics, computers, jewelry, you can even get a car. Now, that's a serious mall. So put all that gas money back in your pocket. Shop online with these merchants. Save money on the products and services and save the gas money. You'll be much, much happier, well-adjusted, and psychologically well-off. Trust me, I know about these things. On Skype, we're still working on it. You're probably saying, well, all you have to do is just install the software. No, that's not all I have to do. I have three computers to coordinate with the master control software, and I still cannot get Skype to leave the volume alone. It seizes it. I've tried two separate other computers now on that. We will conquer it. I don't lose. We will win. But I just haven't done so yet. We're working on it. All right, my guest this evening is Michael Horn, and we're going to be talking about the Billy Meyer UFO case. It's not an incident. It's a long-running case. And he's got some interesting things to share with us, some updates. So you want to clean your ears out and be ready. We'll be back right after this. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network
is supplied by the independent artist from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles and free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today.
Show unique in the galaxy.
And we are back. My guest this evening is Michael Horn. He has been with us before a couple of times. It's been a while, and there have been some new developments in the Billy Meier case and the information surrounding the Billy Meier case. Let me warn you before I bring him on the air that with this new telephone system that we have plugged in, I'm not really sure what happens when we go on the air. So if his volume, blasts you out of the car or blasts you away from your desk, give me about half a second and I'll get it adjusted. Michael, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much for having me back on. It's a delight. I'm glad to know that you're hanging in there, that you're doing well, and that we can speak again.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Now, Michael, when we were on before, I had you sort of introduce people to Billy Meier. But, you know, we have new listeners, and not just new listeners. There are new listeners who each and every day who are also new to this whole realm of knowledge, of information, and so may not have heard of Billy Meier, even though this case is one of the pinnacle cases, and it's been much discussed for decades now. Still, we have people for whom that's brand new. So if you will, give us a real quick thumbnail sketch of Billy Meier and what we're talking about.
Absolutely. Billy Meier is a 71-year-old Swiss man who claims that his first contacts with extraterrestrial human beings began when he was a 5-year-old boy, 66 years ago, that these contacts were voluntary, fully wide awake, on board the ships in many, many, many cases throughout the years, and that these contacts with extraterrestrial humans continue to this very day. That he has been afforded opportunities since 1964, most people don't know, for 44 years to photograph, to film, videotape, even record the sounds of these craft, that he's been giving not only this but other physical evidence such as metal alloy samples that were analyzed at IBM and deemed to be irreproducible with any technology available to the examining scientist. Meier is a remarkable man, all the more so because all of the physical evidence that I've just mentioned, which is really hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pieces, as well as some 24,000 plus pieces of pages of information that he hand types, all of this he's done with only one hand, having lost his arm in 1965. There have been 21 attempts on his life in the past 40 years, and it's truly the most controversial UFO case. In my opinion, it is the only actual still ongoing UFO contact case in the world.
All right. Now, I'm glad that you brought up the fact that it's controversial, because as we were talking before we went on the air, I said, you know, Michael, you're a lightning rod, and this case is a lightning rod, and I find it phenomenal that it is such a lightning rod. There seems to be no middle ground. People either they say Billy Meier is right on, or they say he is a complete fraud, and there doesn't seem to be much, if any, middle ground related to Billy Meier, and that has also applied to you since you've started speaking on behalf of the Billy Meier case.
Yes, it's true. And you know, when we were speaking briefly about that, as you mentioned just before the show, it caused me to think about something, and it's this, Kevin. If, let's just say for a moment that they're extraterrestrials, and that they have these craft that we call UFOs or whatever, certainly they could make themselves known to us worldwide in a matter of moments. Everybody in the world would know that these craft exist for sure, and the ones that are of extraterrestrial origin, I'm saying that deliberately, the ones that are, would be piloted by them, and they could appear and all that, and we'd know. The problem with that is this, that they already know that with the population of our world now actually about 7.5 billion, according to them, with so many people who hold so many different belief systems, knowledge and lack of knowledge, emotional ranges of, you know, volatility, that we would have more psychosis and violence going on in the world, if one can even imagine that, than we already have. So what they've done, in my opinion, is that they have gone through a painstakingly slow, kind of abstract, obtuse approach to us, and knowing that we are not ready, we collectively, not necessarily on some individual levels, we collectively are not ready to be forced to believe, to accept, to know, right down that chain, that this and these people are real. Therefore, they have taken, you know, these 66 years with this one individual, in my own opinion, that is true, and they have been working their information and evidence into the world in the manner that they have through, you know, a number of people, Meyer, other people here and there, and myself, and we see this provocation, the way people respond to it, which unfortunately, and here's my point, it kind of validates their approach. It kind of shows that rather than overwhelming curiosity to know what's true, we get a polarization, which is very heavy on the side of accusation that this is all a hoax, it's all false. And I'm glad whenever you want to discuss now how we know it isn't a hoax.
All right, before we do that, here's what I would like for us to do. I first want to point out that there have been, over the years, I think you said 24,000 pages of information. And I think it's important to underscore that Billy Meier does not claim to have gotten this by channeling. He got this information in face-to-face contact, he says, with these extraterrestrial beings. Am I correct?
That's, yes, plus one other thing, which is, he has done a large body of writing himself, not channeling, but as you mentioned, but writing based on his experiences with them, his own knowledge and efforts to bring forth information, and that this information would be available to people to check out. However, he is obtaining it through his own efforts and consciousness.
Okay. Now, how do we know, and even though we have people that didn't hear that first show or the second show, where we talked about photographic evidence and so forth,
right,
there have been some other developments really fairly recently that indicate that Meyer was right.
Yeah.
And that seem to validate the information that he's been giving. Let's talk about that, and we can talk about photographic evidence as well, but I want to talk about this more recent stuff before we move back into that.
Surely. Well, one of the things that happened within the last, I guess, 3 weeks, I'm not looking at a computer right now, so I don't have dates in front of me, but within the last, let's say, 3 weeks, there were two discoveries that NASA confirmed on Mars, and those two confirmations, I think, happened within a week. The first one was that they were able to conclusively discover the presence of water on Mars. While it may have been theorized, debated, rejected, what have you, they were able now to prove that water is on Mars. Then, within, as I say, about a week of that or so, there was another discovery made, and that there was a substance in the soil that was collected by the lander up there that was pretty toxic to life. And I think the term for it was perchlorate, which we have these perchlorates down here too, but they discovered it and they said that that's a, you know, detrimental substance for life. Once I'd heard about the original Mars, the water thing on Mars, I looked, because on my computer, for some reason a few weeks before, I had pulled out a sentence or two from one of the volumes of these contact notes as they were published by Wendell Stevens. And I can explain all this later, you know, in detail, but I'll just explain what happened. And it was about that scientists would discover water on Mars in the future. And when I say in the future, in a moment, I'll give you the dates for you, your listeners, to know what we're talking about. And then after this...
This is something that Billy Meyer wrote.
Yeah, it actually came out of a... See, let me explain. I'll explain now how this works. When Meyer is with these people, whether it's in his office in the mountains or on one of their ships, whenever he is with the extraterrestrials and they are communicating, this information is being recorded by their devices. Well, that's not such a big trick. We have devices that record, too. The trick comes when he gets back into his own office on Earth, and at an appropriate time, he sits down at his typewriter, and that device beams to him telepathically, not to confuse it with channeling entities, but it beams to him telepathically the exact conversation. But it also does it not in the language in which it was conducted, the German, precisely Swiss German, but it beams it to him in symbols, images, that he has been trained to recognize since he was a child. He knows well over 3 million different symbols and what they mean, words, concepts, what have you. He simultaneously, as he receives them, translates them in his head into German and then types them out. And we have in our film, we show him doing this typing. He can type up to and over 60 words a minute with his one hand in German. Pretty good trick.
I'd like to do that. I use two hands, and 60 words a minute is a bit beyond me.
I'm nowhere near it. So he can barrel away at about 60 words a minute or so with one hand in German, translating all this as he goes and putting it down. Now, so what happened was, 32 years ago, I think the date was something like July 8th, 1976, and he was with this woman, this contact woman, Semyaze, and they were in her craft, and they were, I believe that they were actually at Mars, because they have taken him on a number of occasions to that planet, as well as others in our solar system, so he says. And they were discussing, and something came up, and she said, well, in the future, your scientists will discover, you know, when they have the right technology, they're going to discover that there's water on Mars. Now, as I just mentioned, I was triggered to find this information. Then the information was published on Earth about this perchlorate in the soil. So I went back to see if there was anything in this contact about that, and in the same paragraph or two, within sentences, she speaks about the fact that we will find life forms on Mars. They will be microscopic, I guess, initially, flora and fauna of some form, but that overall, something about Mars is hostile to life, detrimental to life. Now, I consider those two things appearing in the same paragraph 32 years ago remarkably similar to what appeared in our news within a week of each other, pertaining to that planet, pertaining to the water, pertaining to the things that were detrimental to life, which equipment was able to detect exactly what it was, this perchlorate. She simply mentioned that there were hostile to life elements up there. Now, on my website, on They Fly, people can read the exact quote, because I have a press release up there, that incorporates this information. Now, that's pretty remarkable. That's not just like lucky guess stuff. But some people might think, well, he's just a really good guesser. But probably in the same press release, I don't remember everything I put in it, I may have well spoken about the two planets beyond Pluto that Meyer wrote about first in 1958. We have that letter on my site. And then again in 1978. Interestingly enough, in the 1978 and 58, he mentions there are two planets beyond Pluto and they're going to be discovered towards the end of this, you know, century, this millennium, meaning, you know, the 1900s. Well, right around the turn of the century, the first of those two planets was discovered. Now, people wanted to say oftentimes, well, Meyer just goes back and writes stuff in to make himself look good. The problem with that theory is twofold. One, the hardest-hitting problem with that theory is that we've got a lot of this in books that were copyrighted and published, you know, 1980, 82, et cetera. That's certainly at least something like 20 years before the two planets beyond Pluto were discovered, 32 years, you know, but these documents have been around, you know, for a long time, since the 70s. The other thing is this. Every time that Meyer has a contact with one of the extraterrestrials, he has to number each sentence that they write in each contact. That means if there's one or two or three extraterrestrials with whom he's speaking, he has to, when he transcribes, number each of these sentences. And when he was told that he had to do that, just like some people might be thinking right now, well, why bother? Well, the answer was very simple. And they said to him, in the future, people are going to accuse you of being a fraud and a hoax, and that you've gone back into your material to put things in that are discovered so that you'll look like you're a psychic or something. By putting numbers, specific numbers, to every sentence that we speak to you when we give you this information, and because these transcripts that you're typing out now, starting in 1975, are going to be disseminated not only in German but in other languages and owned by people all over the world, every sentence that's numbered, no matter what language it's in and no matter who has it, it will all be the same for all time to come. There'll be no way. And, of course, this is before the Internet and doctoring documents electronically and all this stuff. This is the 70s, and the guy's working with a typewriter with one hand and mimeographing stuff and running it off. The problem for me, and this is something that, you know, I may have to mention a few times, is people are so belligerent oftentimes and so resistant to thinking through. Not that they should believe this because I tell somebody or Billy Myers told somebody, but that they refuse to think through how these things could be possible when the facts and circumstances are known, when the reporting, the investigating, the investigative reports total 1,300 pages over an eight-year period, when nobody could find the man hoaxing a darn thing, and nonetheless you have the armchair experts and the know-it-alls that want to show basically their own ignorance and lack of thinking ability, and so they attack the Meyer case with the most outlandish and foolish stuff you can imagine.
All right, now recently there was a special effects group or person over in England that tried to duplicate the film. What about that? Tell us about that. We've got about 3 minutes here till break.
Sure, and you can just you know shut me down when you need to.
All right.
Many skeptics have claimed that Meyer's photos and films and video are an easily duplicated hoax. And we'll come back to another gentleman who really stuck his foot in his mouth with this. But I'll deal with this guy, this one skeptic, who's very hostile to the Meyer case. But I detected in him when he contacted me and basically challenging and saying it's all a hoax. I said, look, you say you can duplicate the films. You go ahead, and I'm going to do this for you. When you get all your results together, I'm going to actually make it possible for people to see this stuff from my website. I'm going to give them a link to it. And I'm not here to attack you or you know, blame you, because if you're willing to do what none of the other skeptics could do or would do, you got my respect. So go for it. Okay, over 3-4 months, whatever, maybe more, this guy puts together, I don't know if it's 24 of these videos by now, and he posts them up there, and he says, okay, I'm done, here they are. And I said, okay, I'm going to post a link, but I'm also going to post a critique in my article on my website by me and by James Deardorff pointing out the weaknesses in your video. We're not going to attack you we're going to just deal with this in a far fairer fashion than anybody's ever dealt with Meyer. So we put that up there. And then I got an email back from the guy. And to his credit, he said, I'm not going to argue this with you. I'm grateful that you put this up, and I can see your points. And he basically concedes that he couldn't duplicate Meyer's stuff. And anybody that looks at both all of his samples and any of Meyer's films, and they read the critique and they see what we pointed out, is going to know right away why he couldn't do it. But I gave a hats off to him. I'm not here just to pummel skeptics, but I have no problem beating up on these idiots because they've come at Meyer guns blazing for 20, 30 years, calling him all sorts of names, and I called him out on it. And I know perhaps we're running out of time right now, but if you want to know the story of how we got a skeptic to participate in our latest film called The Silent Revolution of Truth, and what happened after we released the film, and what's happened to this skeptic and his argument since then, that's a story I'd be delighted to tell as well. But
yeah, we don't have time before the break, but let's get to that first thing up when we come back from break.
Surely.
All right.
Okay, folks, we are headed off into a break here. We're just seconds away. And hopefully the reprogramming of my software has those weird things not happening tonight that happened on Friday. We'll be back more with Michael Horn and the Billy Meyer case right after this.
Oh,
And welcome back. We are talking this evening with Michael Horn, and we're talking about the Billy Meier case. Now, Michael, just before we went to break,
you were telling us about a skeptic that participated in your latest film.
Correct.
Tell us about that.
Correct. Surely. Well, I'll give you the whole background on it. In the year 2001, February of 2001, I went over to an organization that was located at the time in Culver City, California, and it's called CFI West, Center for Inquiry West. It's affiliated with James Randi, the skeptic, Amazing Randi. And I brought in Meier's photos and films for one of the case investigators there. I said, I think I've got something here that's really very genuine. You guys should look at it. He said, okay, bring it in. We'll take a look. And the gentleman who looked at this, his name was Vaughn Reese. And he said, nope, this is all a very easily duplicated hoax. And I said, well, I sure don't want to run around representing a hoax, and you say it's easily duplicated. Tell me, would you be willing to duplicate one of these photos and one of these films? He said, yes, we'll do that. I said, great. So over a several-month period, I stayed in touch with him, and he said they were moving, and they had some delays, and this, that, and the other thing. And finally, they posted some photographs of a little UFO model, and they said, we've duplicated the effect of Meier's photos. And I said, pardon me, but that wasn't the challenge. We can watch sci-fi movies that have the effect of a spaceship or a UFO. You were going to duplicate Meier's photos, and by the way, where's the film? And I ended up on the Coast to Coast Art Bell show, and the skeptic called in, and one thing led to another, and Art Bell said, well, are you going to submit your photos to the same testing that Meier's were? And the guy said no, and Art said, well, you know, get out of here. Basically, that was that. And this skeptic and I had exchanged emails along with other people at his organization, and it's all documented. And at a certain point, the organization was in such, I guess, hot water about it, because I kept on going after them like a little mad bulldog, and they got rid of this guy, Vaughn Reese, and they got another guy in named Derek Bartholomew, along with another fellow who's there named James Underdown. And so they took up the banner of the Meier case being a hoax. And I ran into Bartholomew a couple years ago at a party when we were working on shooting this film, and I said to him, hey, we're doing a film on the Meier case, a documentary, and how would you like to be interviewed for it? And he initially said, well, I don't think so, because, you know, we have really a different point of view about this than you do. I said, yeah. But that's okay. I said, I would like to give you your chance to make your best argument, you know, and we would interview you for this, because it's not going to serve me to try to ridicule you or fudge with your interview. That's not very credible. That's not the way I do it anyhow. We'll give you, not only that, you get a chance to sign off on it. I'll give you a written agreement that you can sign off on your participation on what this segment will look like before we release it in, as part of our film. So he agreed. We went to interview him, and it actually didn't turn out to be an interview. He had prepared a scripted presentation with photographs and some of the clips from Meier's films and stuff, and he went through this whole thing about why it was model trees and model UFOs and it was a hoax, and he did the whole thing. And so what I did is I did intersperse some rebuttal, some kind of, you know, very quick rebuttal to his points. We sent him the thing, and he did sign off on it. And then once it was out, I decided to let the other shoe hit the floor. And I pointed out, you know, through my letters and emails and articles, that this critique of his was claiming that Meier had used model trees and that they were all the same tree, all the same model tree, and that he used various photos to try to substantiate that, photos of Meier's. So I showed, using his own evidence, but the trees were not model, not only not model trees, they weren't even similar enough to have warranted the claim that they were the same, whether he would think they were real or not. He finally had to retract that claim, and that was the foundation of his argument, really. And on my website, I have an article there, you know, about skeptic retracting his claims.
Now, how did he retract it? Did he send you a letter, or did he do it on a video, or how was it done?
I think what he did is he actually had to, on an online forum where the discussion was about the Meier case and the film and me and all. By the way, one of a number of forums where they do not allow me to post rebuttals. It's not exactly a democracy on the internet with people in the UFO and paranormal world to a large degree. But on one of these forums, he answered somebody, and he said something to the effect, it's as I said, I'm not in front of a computer, but it's like, I have to agree with Michael Horn that that was the weakest part of my argument. Well, that was the foundation of his argument, that Meyer had been using models, model trees and model UFOs. And then, so I let that one sink in and posted it up there. Then he got nervous and went to some forestry experts who 25 years ago or so, 20, 25 years ago, had examined some of Meyer's photos, the ones that specifically had good shots of trees. They were submitted to these guys by Professor James Dierdorf, who asked them to let him know if these were actually potted trees, model trees, miniatures, or real mature trees. All of the forestry experts said, those look to be real, mature, full-size trees. Well, Derek wrote an email to a couple of them, and one of the guys was very uncomfortable being contacted. And of course, Derek had said some things in the email to him which were not true, and the guy was upset. And
so who is Derek? That's the skeptic?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So he was trying to imply that none of the forestry experts really had said what they said, which they did. But like most people that are in the mainstream scientific world, they really shy away from getting any kind of commentary going on any aspect of UFO cases for reasons like this, because then people come mad-dogging them. And actually, the general counsel, the attorney for the university, had written me an email, and I said to him, I've seen, you know, this other professor's email where he's really upset about this. I said, I'll tell you what, here's my offer to you. We'll resubmit the photos to you, and you can have anybody you look at up there tell us your opinion. I said, forget about the UFOs. You can just tell us whether those are mature trees or not, or you can just let it go as it was given, you know, years ago. And he said, well, we're going to take your kind offer and decline to participate, and just we wish you good luck. And I thought that was pretty good because, you know, they don't want to get embroiled, but they're not going to look at these photos again because they know, first of all, the trees are real, and all they have to do is come out with that, and now they're a bunch of kooky professors. Then the next thing happened. Derek was flustered about that. So he contacted the special effects experts that own the company called Uncharted Territory. Uncharted Territory won the Academy Award for special effects for the film called Independence Day.
Oh, that's some good stuff there.
It's some good stuff, isn't it? And you think that since they won the Academy Award for it, they might be the right guys to talk to. Well, I don't know if it was before or after they won the award, because I went there about 3 years ago, because I knew a guy that knew them. I brought in the films and the photos and put on one of the films. Actually, I put on a whole clip, but we were at one point where the UFO's coming in close and lights are flashing off of it in the daylight. And I said to them, the skeptic said that this is a model, and I barely could complete the two syllables, and they both laughed, and they said, we know models, those aren't models. I said, really? I said, of course, I don't think they're models either, but tell me something. Do you think you could duplicate these films? And the guy said, well, when was the film made? I said, between 75 and 78, and he said, well, I'll tell you, if we could, we'd have to go to CGI, because those aren't models. Well, that was in the film, and so Derek went to these guys, and he wanted them to refute that statement, you know, disavow that it had been made. So they read him back, and he posts the answer again on an internet site, and they said, well, you know, we recall seeing these film clips. We're not sure it went down exactly the way Horn said, but we'll tell you the following. And I have, as I said, the exact quote is in that article on my website, and they said, in order for this to have been hoaxed, the guy probably would have needed a crane and wires to control whatever the model is, but even then, it would have been very hard. And then they go on to say, it would have been very hard, probably even impossible to fake the shot. Now, the skeptics don't know what to do with themselves when an Academy Award-winning special effects company that knows how to hoax things, because that's their business, says, very hard, probably impossible to fake. Believe me, if those guys had come back and said, oh, we could do that with Tin Pan, you know, we wouldn't hear the end of it. But now we can't get any more response from these guys. So I went after them one more step, because in the film, he had pointed to a particular film clip where Meyer is showing a UFO in broad daylight. It's hovering in the center of a screen, and suddenly, in a flash of a second, It jumps about a quarter mile away and then partially dips behind a hill. It then comes
I remember
back.
Seeing that.
You remember that one?
I have seen that, yeah.
Yeah, and then slowly, instead of like in a flash of a second, it then takes several seconds to zigzag its way back up to center screen, getting larger as it does. Well, Derek, for some reason, wasn't convinced that he's not sure that it's dipping behind the hill, which of course means it's not a model. Well, the thing is so darn blurry, you know, and far away, that if that's a small model, it would have to be clearer and to be a close-up shot. It's not. So it's a large object in the distance dipping behind a hill, but here's the kicker. I then challenged him, and I said, now, since you claim that that was a model anyway, I defy you to duplicate that. I said, there's only two ways with a model that I can figure out that you can duplicate that shot. One, you'd have to use overhead suspension, and two, you'd have to use a pulley rig, and here's what's the problem. I didn't give him the answer at that point, but I did say, I'm prepared to demolish either theory. Let's hear from you since you made these claims. He's refused to respond for over 3 months to that.
Now let me inject something into what we're talking about. The reason that we're talking about models, because I know there are people saying, well, yeah, but you can do it with a computer. Yeah, but that did not exist at the time these films were made.
You're absolutely correct.
The only way to have done it, if it could be done, would have been with a model.
That's right. And the reason he couldn't do it with an overhead suspended model, which is the same part of the same criteria that we do our critique on Tony Wharton's films. Let's even assume that it was only, quote-unquote, as one skeptic was theorizing, that it was something like 90 feet away, which, of course, would have been impossible. But nonetheless, let's say it was a model 90 feet away that you were going to bring from a low point relatively back up to a high point close to the camera. To do that without having the object wobble and sway and dip, you would have to have not only a top suspension, but on either side of this object, and just by virtue of the geometry and the calculation of size that the object would have to be, one skeptic committed to a size, you'd have to have people standing on 80-foot cranes on either side of it, as well as somebody else maneuvering it with at least a 50- or 60-foot pole, dangling wire on a pole. Well, obviously impossible. The impossibility with a rig and pulley is you can't get an object to zigzag on pulleys, which are straight-line, devices. So the problem for skeptics, whether they're professional or amateur, is that they haven't thought this out. They've not gone to the trouble to actually think how this could be done and then gone ahead, go to their backyard, and try and do it. Tony Wharton was the only one, and he unequivocally demonstrated that it can't be done. Certainly not in 1975 by a one-armed man in the hilly mountains and hills and valleys of windy Switzerland. So this is where the physical evidence, the films and the photos, and Myra, as they say, took hundreds of them, it passes right literally over the heads of all of these geniuses that think they figured out a hoax. And much to our detriment, much to our loss, should we remain, pardon me, this stupid, because it isn't even the UFOs that are important here. It's the information imparted to Meyer, published for our benefit to try to get us to assure our own future survival and not destroy ourselves, that is, for me, at the core of this matter, and it's only the fact that they've given so many forms of irreproducible evidence and solid information that's been impeccable and non-self-contradictory that we could discover if we were smart enough that the evidence has been right in front of our eyes, hidden in plain sight for at least 30 years.
All right, we have to take a break, and we will return. When we come back, I want to talk about some more of the recent developments, including Russia-Georgia conflict. We'll be back right after this.
Drive me out of my mind, but you that innocent smile that laughs keeps me coming right back. Georgia, you don't leave one shred of doubt. Well, in all my days, I'll never figure you out. Well, I'm second, triple guessing, stumbling around the place, falling flat on my face.
Kevin Smith here. Do you have your Kevin Smith Show t-shirt yet?
No?
Well, let today be the day you step into the world of galactic fashion. Visit the Kevin Smith Show online store and get yours today.
And we are back. I'm talking this evening with Michael Horn, and we're talking about the Billy Myers case.
One of the big things in the Billy Myers case that I think is important, and you've mentioned it, we've talked about it some, is this volume, I mean, it's encyclopedic volumes of information that he has published. And you say on your website that he even talks about, I think it was in 1991, he talked about a coming conflict between Russia and Georgia, the former Soviet Republic.
Well, let me be specific on that because, you know, people are entitled, of course, to know fully what I'm claiming on that, and I didn't maybe make it as clear because I call it the Russia-Georgia scenario, and for this reason. Actually, the conversation took place in 1989 that Meyer had with one of the ETs who was warning him about this. And again, I'm not right in front of the computer right now, but they warn about the scenario in what they say the Eastern Bloc countries and the region, because they use that word as well, where the people will not yet be mature enough to handle their newly won freedoms and that there will be some setbacks, especially when there's some irrational behavior on their parts and various governments are going to be forced to crack down because of uprising and, here's one of the keys, because of the covert influences and interference from Western powers and their secret services. What they have said, and they've been saying it for quite some time, is that the West, and specifically our country's military and a lot of secret service, I don't know how else to put it, but secret activities from military intelligence has fomented trouble in different parts of the world. Now, this, people can either say that it's true, it's not true, we can research it. It's unpleasant to think that we or our government has done things that is less than above board or noble, viewed from this perspective. And if some of these actions have taken place, they've been viewed by the intelligence agencies and military intelligence as necessary from their point of view for, quote-unquote, American interests. But the point is that when viewed by the Pleiaren, by the extraterrestrials, and foreseen by them the activities in this area, they were very, very, very specific in saying that there was going to be this kind of covert interference and instigation from the West. If anybody has been getting their news reports from outside the country, even from the mainstream news, that indeed said Georgia was the attacker and aggressor in this case against the peoples of those regions, and that the Russians, you know, came in against that, and that there were reports, at least, of U.S., Israeli, and other NATO personnel involved in the area. It's either true or it's not true, but strangely enough, we have this being in print, in book form, in 1991, 2001, and 2004. And here we are with the situation that's just gone down over there, not completely over yet. But according also to this...
Well, let me interject this.
Sure.
And you made it, I think, clear, but I want to underscore it. Whether we agree with side A or side B in this is not the issue. The issue is that it was in print.
Yes, that's correct. And also that they've also indicated in that paragraph, as I read it, that it's not just an isolated incident where there's going to be problems over there. Plus, in the other prophecies that date back a long time, from Meyer's own prophecies from 1958, 64, 87, 89, et cetera, et cetera, all of this is part of a pattern that they are trying to warn us about and have been trying to warn us about for 50-something years, because it leads to something horrendous. And what they say it leads to is a horrendous Third World War. And what's especially horrendous to anybody that might be listening tonight is that they claim that should this event take place, not only will our own policies from this country have been largely responsible for bringing it about, but that the destruction that we will experience here as a result of it is unparalleled and unimaginable. And of course they do not neglect to identify Islamic terrorism as a major horrendous force in the world, and they're kind of equal opportunity offenders. They've said something harsh about virtually every group that's got military stuff going on the planet. But this is what triggered me into why we have these prophecies. What is this about? It's pretty simple to me. They've given us 50-something years of impeccably accurate information, great physical evidence, so that maybe those among us who want to wake up will take a look at what they're telling us about the near and more distant future, and that we would start to do something about it before it is too late to do anything.
You know, Michael, accurate information given prior to an event is something that people think they want to know what's coming. People talk about wanting to know what's coming. But when you tell them what's coming, they don't believe it. Whenever,
right.
And by the way, I'm not saying they should believe Billy Meyer. I'm just talking in general terms that people, I have noticed this. I'm 55 years old. I have noticed through 55 years that people talk about wanting to know what's coming. They hound everyone who possibly could tell them what's coming to tell them. And then they don't believe what they get told. And then after it happens, they try to explain it away as, well, that's some sort of hoax, and you know, and I'm not saying that Billy Meier could not hoax. Anything's possible in this world, but the system that is set up, as you described it, I find it difficult to see how you could hoax it. Now, let me give you an example. And this one has to do with prophecies that are in the Bible, and they're in the book of Daniel. That is so accurate, that book of Daniel and the prophecies of the coming empires was so accurate that modern biblical scholars say it was written after the fact, even though there is solid evidence it was in existence prior to the fact.
Mm-hmm.
And so the same thing, as I understand what you're saying, the same sort of thing is happening with the Billy Meier's writings, the Billy Meier's prophecies. And when we use this word prophecy, we're not using it in a in the same sense that you talk about prophecies that are in the Bible, are you?
Well, I'm not, because I'm not as knowledgeable about the Bible as you and others would be, I won't answer that with a yes or no. What I'll say is this, to define it as I understand it. When they speak about prophecies, they are saying these are events that are likely to occur if people do not act to change direction in time based on the laws of cause and effect. And we have prophets all over the place. We've got weathermen, architects, engineers of all form, you know, aviation specialists, space, people that calculate outcomes based on known information and project something, and if they're right, the building goes up, the plane reaches its destination, and the rain comes on Saturday. If they're wrong, as you know, can sometimes happen, things don't turn out as well. In the case of predictions, according to the information in the case, predictions are events that will happen with certainty. They cannot be prevented. And in some of those cases, we are not given those predictions because these people have already calculated that we would only compound our own trouble by trying to get in the way and stop something that has to happen. It's kind of like when you send out a pendulum, and if it's just on its, you know, beginning to arc forward, so to speak, and you realize you don't want a certain thing to happen, and you can still pull it back or change its course or knock it to the side. Once it's reached the point of no return and it pauses for that fraction of a second at the top of the outward arcing, it starts to come back. We are in a place, historically, human beings, where we have not pendulums coming back, but wrecking balls with return to sender written all over them. And this is our problem. So,
well, you know, that fits very well with one of the things that I say often, and that is whatever you do is coming up behind you. And it's either going to run you over or push you higher, depending on whether it was good or evil.
You got it. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you, because they will, and life will too. We just are too often so superficial in our thinking and so greedy, to be honest, that we do things and damn the consequences because we're not going to be there when the thing comes back. But we set it in motion, and yeah, we're there. Or others who have been, you know, are innocent are there, unfortunately, because events, cause and effect is a dumb law. It doesn't care who sent out what. It simply figures out, well, you must want some of that because that's what you're putting out. Here it comes, you know.
Yeah.
And it just keeps returning it all over the place.
Yeah, and one of the things I also say is it's coming up behind you with momentum.
Yeah.
You get back more than you plant.
I think so.
Yeah.
And that can be good news. It can be wonderful news if the...
Or it can be a nightmare. We have to take a break.
It can be a nightmare.
Yep.
We have to take a break. We'll be back. On the other side of this break, we're going to open up the phone line. Remember the new telephone number, 602-539-3316. We shall return.
Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. Get it all. Become a member at KevinSmithShow.com.
We are back, and we're talking with Michael Horn. The telephone number is 602-539-3316.
602-539-3316. Michael, you still with me?
Oh, yeah.
Very good. Now, let me say, for those who are listening by radio, you're having no problems with the audio. For those of you who are listening on the internet, you're having no problems with the audio. For those of you who are watching on our TV channel, for some reason, it isn't giving you any audio, and there's nothing I can do about it right now. I tried during the break to figure out what that problem was and was not able to do so. Obviously, something in this new setup that we're using tonight has cut the audio out of the TV channel. But we do have audio on the radio. So we'll continue with that. All right, let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Rex from Florida.
Hi, Rex. Are you a first-time caller?
Yes.
Well, first-time callers get some applause. Let's play some applause for you. How long have you been listening to the Kevin Smith Show?
Actually, just within the last month. I've gone through a lot of your archives to get caught up.
Well, good. Well, I tell you what, we're delighted to have you. What's on your mind this evening?
Okay. I wanted to ask Michael, you said that there's still ongoing contacts with Billy Meyer, right?
Yes.
Has he done any new film, video, or transcripts?
Well, I'm sure there's more transcripts because he transcribes the conversations generally within a relatively short period of time, couple days or so of his contact. They're transcribed in German. The problem is that there isn't an ongoing English translation team because it's really up to people who speak any and all languages, each group, to get a hold of the transcript and translate them and get them approved from Switzerland. We do have some people who here and there do, you know, go in and translate various contacts, and that's whenever I'm able to make them available on my site or put them out on DVDs or what have you. As far as new video, there's no new filming or photographing of the craft by Meyer, although as recently as a couple of years ago, other people have been photographing still the player and ships. Meyer himself is in our new film called The Silent Revolution of Truth, and he speaks for himself and tells his own story in there, and we show as much of the photographic and film evidence and everything as we possibly can.
Okay. Yeah, I was just thinking with the modern cameras, with the high res and things, that'd be very impressive if he was still filming anything new.
It would be. It's just that they told him, actually, about 1980, they said, well, from this point on, we're not going to do photo ops because computers are going to become very widespread in the world and available to everybody. And they said, you think you've got problems now. People would only accuse you, of course, of using a computer to generate the imagery. So you have 1,200 photos, you've taken 8 films, a video, that's it. But even a skeptic in Switzerland, this is really a remarkable thing, unfortunately the document's only available in German so far, but there's a skeptic in Switzerland who, along with his wife, had been calling Meyer all sorts of names for years, and then sent him a letter saying, I have to apologize to you here, you see these photos in here? I took them of the spaceship above your place, I know it's real, but I ask you not to publish my name because my wife still thinks you're, an agent of the devil or something, but I know you're telling the truth. My apologies, here's some photographs. So, it's for them it's old news over there. The UFO part, they kind of yawn through.
All right, Rex, I want to thank you for your call.
Okay.
All right, be sure you call us again. All right, the telephone number again, ladies and gentlemen, 602-539-3316. And from what I could tell on this side of the issue, from what I could tell, that was a much better audio than what we have become accustomed to lately on the old standard telephone line. So, anyway, again, 602-539-3316 if you wish to talk with Michael Horn. Michael, I get lots and lots of email every day. And in fact, like most people that are in this business, if you will, I get tons and tons of what is referred to as spam mail, and we have to filter that out. But we do get it. And then we have to sort through and get all the stuff that's, you know, the real email. Now, once I do that, I get email every week about Billy Meier.
Sure.
Every single week I get email about the Billy Meier case. And as I said, there's no middle ground. People are either into it, and yes, this is a good thing, and I believe that this man is truthful, and, you know, or this guy is a fraud, and, you know, why should you pay any attention to it? But one thing is an absolute fact. There's hardly a week goes by that I don't get some email related to Billy Meier.
That's pretty amazing, actually.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and, you know, I get email having to do with why don't I have Michael Horn on again, and then I get email that says, you know, I can't believe you'd have that guy, and there's just no middle ground. I kind of would like to address that just a little bit, and then I'll let you respond to it.
Sure.
It's not just Billy Meier, although that's a big one. What happens is in the UFO community, unfortunately, there are a few, not all of them and not even most of them, but there are a few that are sort of UFO or ufology cannibals. They eat their own. And they assume they've got the truth and everybody else is wrong. And then they want me. And I get these emails. I got emails like this week from more than one person wanting me to censor who I have on the show. And there is, there are some people that I won't have on this show. There's a couple of folks that are very well known that I think need pills. I'm quite serious about that. I think they need help. And I'm not ridiculing, I'm being honest about it. All right, but having said that, there are others that I don't think they need help. It's that I think they just sort of have a mean streak. And they want me to filter people off of the show and keep people off of the show. Well, that's what the mainstream media does. The mainstream media filters and keeps people off of their airwaves so that you never even get to hear them. How can you decide whether something is true or not if you never even get to hear it? I'd like to get your thoughts on that just briefly. We've got a couple of calls on hold, and let me say to both callers, if you'll just hang on, we'll get to you.
I'll answer fairly quickly, I hope. First of all, I'll take the end of it. I am, to the best of my knowledge right now, the most requested guest for the Larry King UFO shows, along with the Meier case. I know this also because the producer from that show called me angry that so many people were requesting and had been given their email and their phone number by me. And I was a little shocked because I thought, well, if you're in the news business and all these people are trying to get you to cover something, don't you look into it rather than criticize the guy popular for it? So that was one thing. The other part is you use this whole thing about kind of the black and white element of the Meier case, but it's funny because that extends to the fact that the case is either the biggest and most impenetrable hoax, or it's the most important story in all of human history. And the energy I want to bring to it now with the UFO groups is this. If you can take a breath, folks, and take a look at the Meier case, and if you can come to the conclusion that it's real, may I suggest you stop with running around chasing lights in the sky and figure out what the heck this case has been about, what's in it, why have these contacts been going on for almost 70 years, what's it about for us and forget about somebody else's fancy airplanes long enough to get some information here. And, you know, that's the tack I'm on. So,
let's go to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Jason from Macon, Georgia.
All right, Jason from Macon, Georgia. Are you a first-time caller?
No, I've called a couple of times.
All right. What's on your mind this evening?
Well, it just seems that the main thing is like getting, proven that it isn't a hoax and getting people to believe you, that there are UFOs out there, aliens out there. And whenever I talk to people at work about it, instead of trying to convince them and believe, what I say, I just tell them, look at our sun. It's a star. And then go outside tonight and look up in the sky and you see all those other stars up there. And those are suns also, just somewhere else. So, and some of those have planets around them. We can't possibly be the only thing, out here. So instead of, trying to convince somebody, at least you're getting them to,
get them to think about it.
Basically. And that's all I wanted to say, all your callers out there, instead of really trying to convince somebody, just get them to think about it. And
well, I'll tell you what, Jason, I'll tell you, thanks for the call. And I truly appreciate that. Good thoughts. But if you can get most folks to think, you've done something that most of the time is impossible. People don't think. They react more than they think. But you're right. If you can get them to think, that's the track to go on. All right. Let's go to this call. And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
I guess that's me.
That's you, sir.
Hi, Kevin. This is Tony in Norman.
Hi, Tony.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. What's on your mind?
Oh, not much. Michael, how are you?
Fine, thanks. I can't hear you super well, but I know you're there.
Okay. I really don't have anything to say except it is a great pleasure to talk to you. And anytime you're on anything, I will listen to anything you have to say, because I really think that anything pertaining to Billy Meyer is totally true.
Well, that's very kind, and don't get me wrong when I say this, because I should be the last one to say it, but I really encourage you, and I vastly, greatly rather appreciate your support, because, we can use it. There's a lot of attacks that are always coming. But I want people, whenever they do go, let's say, look at my website or look at Meyer material, think it through critically. Make sure that you can have a sense that you know it's either true or it isn't. And that's all I could ask of anybody. And I'm glad that you have obviously become familiar enough with the Meyer case that you feel that positively towards it. And I'm grateful for your support, believe me.
All right. Tony, thank you again so much for that call. The telephone number is 1-602-539-3316. 602-539-3316. If you have a question or a comment of Michael Horn. Michael, you've been called a lot of things. One of the things that you've been called is a fraud. And I think in the last show that you were on with me here, the last time you were here, I think someone did say they thought you were a fraud. But there have been people that have written that sort of thing in blogs and forums and so forth. How do you react to that?
Well, it's a funny one of all the things, because when I hear the word fraud, it seems to me that it means that you're trying to defraud somebody, you're trying to get something from them for something that isn't true, you're trying to sell them something. Look, I haven't done a bunch of commercials during our show yet. I want everybody to see the film and all this wonderful stuff, but I'll be quite direct with everybody. I don't get people complaining about any of the things that they've gotten from me, like if they've purchased the film or anything. I don't get people complaining about it and demanding their money back. And if they did, you know, is it defective? Here's your money back. Because I fill my website up with tons of free stuff. So fraud, I don't get. I wouldn't complain or question so much if people say, well, you come off like you're arrogant, or you come off like a know-it-all, or you get really nasty with people on online forums that call you a liar as soon as you put your name up there. It's true. I'm not shy about fighting back with people because I happen to have, in this particular case, with the Meyer case, I've got nearly 30 years of experience of investigating every part of it that I could. I know it to be true. I don't know if everything in the case is true because so much of it's still in German. I know the man. I know family members. I know witnesses and other people. I know the original investigators. I mean, the people that say the word fraud, I don't even have an angry reaction to it. It just doesn't seem
no point of reference here.
Yeah, I mean,
okay.
You can say, oh, you're a liar. You didn't do that, Michael Horner. You don't know that. Well, I can defend that. I'll say, okay, here's how I know this or that. I'm not lying.
Yeah.
Where's the fraud? I don't get it.
All right, let's go back to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
Hey. Hi, I'm going to try and play devil's advocate. I just wondered why that he thinks that they picked Billy Meyer to do this, and that is there any one specific thing or purpose, you know, that's supposed to benefit mankind come from this?
Yeah, what about that, Michael? Why did they pick Billy Meyer?
Those are great questions. Let me give you my understanding of why they picked him. So just to clarify, the information of the case is what I represent. I have my own opinions, but in this case, my opinion wouldn't mean anything because I don't almost have an opinion. Here's what I understand from the case. According to the information, these extraterrestrial people know that reincarnation is a fact of life. It's not that they believe it is, and like with us, we either believe it or we don't believe it, we don't know, because they say there's something called the human spirit. It's different from the soul. There is a soul, but the spirit is the eternal, immortal part of us that's impersonal. It reincarnates over and over, literally millions of times in the course of evolution. Now, this is, again, this is what they're saying. They have the ability, due to their own high scientific level of development, as well as spiritual knowledge, to be able to track and identify, to know about what the past incarnation of a given person is, if that spirit or who that spirit was in other incarnations. Billy Meyer, it is said, is the current incarnation of a very ancient spirit that has played a role similar to this numerous times in our world, apart from any other prehistory of that spirit, but just as it pertains to our world, that it has played the part of a prophet on our world before, and that this is the final time that we will get what they consider to be a true prophet whose intended purpose is to bring, finally, the complete, true spiritual teachings of creation, this is their term for it, that are eternally true for all humans everywhere in the universe, and that have been brought to us before, but that were changed, corrupted, and altered by various religious forces throughout history, not just...
Okay, so the reason that they chose Billy is because he's done this before.
And because they could determine at an early enough stage that if he continued, if the person that was growing up from five-year-old Edward Albert Meyer would continue on this path and would accept this mission again, because the person always has the choice whether to do it or not, that he would be the most qualified, although there were five other people that were potentials for this, he'd be the most qualified one, and he developed the strength of character and perseverance to suffer and survive 21 attempts on his life, kidnapping attempts on his children, numerous personal injuries and catastrophes, as well as phenomenal experiences. But the second part of the question then, if I covered that enough for the idea here,
yeah,
that the spirit has done this, is this. By contacting him and bringing him information, far more important than the UFOs, which not all the UFOs we see are extraterrestrial by a long shot, but that's another story, but that we would gain access to an unchanging record now of true spiritual teachings, and especially about the power of the individual's thought, the indwelling spirit, the connection of the spirit to what they call the creation, the very essence of this universe, the consciousness that creates and sustains all things. I'm not using religious terms here, like God or anything like that, only because they don't, and they have other information about that. So the purpose is to get us back into self responsibility. I know this was
Their purpose in the messages, but their purpose in picking or the reason to pick Billy was that there was an innate receptiveness because he's done it before, right?
Yes, and he would be able to have access to some of the resources that he had in other lives as well.
All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Kevin. This is Don calling from Phoenix.
I can hear you much better on this system, Don.
Good, I'm glad.
Yeah, now we have a break coming up. If the break catches you, are you willing to hang on through the break?
Yes, I am.
All right, go ahead.
How you doing, Michael?
I'm fine, Don. Nice to talk to you.
This is Don calling from the Alien Speaker News.
Oh, wow, great.
Hey, it's good
wonderful
to talk to you.
Hear your voice.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment. Michael is one, you know, for the short time I've known Michael, I find Michael to be a very honest, credible, and compassionate person for what he believes in. Michael is not out to deceive anybody. I do not know a whole lot about the Billy Meyer case.
All right, we're into the break. Hang on, and I'll catch you first thing when we come back from this break. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. The telephone number is 602-539-3316.
Back. My guest this evening is Michael Horn, and Michael, we still have this call holding, so Don, go ahead. I had to cut you off.
That's okay. Yeah, I just wanted to make the point that, you know, I do find Michael a very honest person. And the point I also wanted to make is just because you get a lot of these guys going around, they're trying to recreate models of what Billy photographed. That doesn't mean it's a fake. I mean, we can recreate anything to make it look like the original. So that's all a bunch of crock, as far as I'm concerned. That doesn't prove anything. You know, you got to look at the characters and the people behind it themselves. And like I say, Michael is a stand-up guy, and I think he's a very, very honest and compassionate person. And he comes across so. And you know me, Kevin. I look at a lot of people with suspicion and caution, but Michael is not one of those guys.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Sure.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Don.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is with Don's telephone line, but we always get a lot of roars, like he's at the bottom of a well. And with this new system that we're using, I was able to filter some of that out. We could hear him a lot better tonight. Are you able to hear the callers?
To varying degrees. There was some kind of strange sound there, but you know what? I was just glad that Don had something positive to say about the case, and he got that, you know, I'm on the level with this stuff. There's just no intention to defraud anybody. You know, let me just add only one thing. I do all my representation on the Meyer case free. So I spend between 6 and 10 hours a day on it. And if I make money on it, it's because people have bought the film or a book or something or other, and they get value out of it. But I'm not doing this. I'm not paid by Meyer. There's no fraud involved. I'm not... That's just the weirdest thing to ever be confronted with, and I hear it from different people, and I'm going, I just don't understand, you know, so I'll leave it at that.
All right. I'm just looking at flash messages that have come in from around the world, and I've got people from around the world telling me, no sound, no sound, no sound.
Oh.
But what they're talking about is on the video. Now, amazingly, during the breaks, I spin around here and work on that, and they are getting sound on the video feed on the internet TV channel now, and I was able to get that fixed. I don't know what caused it, and I don't know what cured it. I clicked everything there was to click and did it again. So... who knows? It's one of those mysteries. Now, the radio feed was working fine, and it was the television feed that was not having any audio. But anyway, we've got audio and on the TV feed, and so everything's fine. One of the good things about it, though, Michael, is that what they can do, the way I have it set up, if they're watching the TV feed... They and there's no audio, they can just click the button on the radio player and listen to the audio on the radio.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good.
So it's getting out there. Now, on the Billy Meyer situation, you say these contacts have continued right up till today. What are they telling him? I mean, do you have any inkling of an idea what they're telling him now and what he's writing now?
Well, I know that he's just finished writing some books, and they're all still in German. It'll take time before they're translated into English. There is a book that I was just informed that he had finished on predictions for the third millennium. That's in German still. That's probably going to take time to be translated. Other than that, when they have their conversations, if the pattern holds true, they talk to him about many things. They talk to him about spiritual matters. They talk to him about current conditions on our world that pertain to political, religious, everyday matters and movements of, you know, countries and plots and all sorts of stuff. They generally, you know, are in comprehensive communication with him. And then what happens is when he types it all out, goes to his keyboard there, he'll print out the sheets of these transcripts, and then he brings them into the kitchen, and somebody who's there will read and look at them and sign and date them so they have a record of it, you know, when these were produced. And then they go into a more formal production and publishing in bound books and things like that. And they have you know, pretty high stack of this, as you can imagine, for over the past 33 years that he's been transcribing. And they also have lots of books where they have taken his various transcripts and then put in newspaper clippings showing that the things that were spoken about that were either casually or formally predicted or prophesied came to pass, and here's the, you know, the latest newspaper report on it. And you'll see that there's a big difference in dates usually between when Meyer was told something and typed it out and when the event happened or the discovery was made. And this is actually how I came to know that the case was true, by my own personal experience of having read something 2 years before it was discovered, and it was mind-blowing. And then other things that I found that were so-called new discoveries, and I was sitting with the transcripts on them for 2 years, and not only that, but the transcripts were from something like 13 years before I got them. So I started to then, in 1986, get a sense, this is about something far more than UFOs. I'm sitting here, and suddenly it's 1988, 2 years after I read all this stuff. I open the paper, and there's a new discovery about A-bomb testing and the ozone damage, and I'm reading it, and I'm saying, but I already know the information. How is that possible?
Yeah, because like you read it in the Meyer information.
Reached under my bed, and there it was.
Yeah. We have a call holding, so let's go to the phone.
Sure.
Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show, and if you'll tell us your first name and where you're calling from. Hello, caller.
Am I on?
You are on the air. You're calling from Louisiana?
Yes, Natchitoches, Louisiana.
From Natchitoches, Louisiana. If you will, tell us your first name.
Jesse,
are you a first-time caller?
Yes.
All right, we got to play some applause for you there, Jesse. We're glad to have you. What's on your mind this evening?
I wanted to tell you about an incident that happened in 1979.
All right.
And I really wanted to call the FBI concerning it. My wife had never allowed me to do that. But
all right, go ahead.
In 1979, I was sitting in a college classroom at Northwestern State University here in Natchitoches. And the teacher didn't show up that day. And I don't know, I took it to be a substitute teacher came in and said, I'm not going to teach the class today, but I want to tell you about something else. If you want to stay, if you want to leave, you can do that. And I know you don't do 9/11 or politics, but this does get around to UFOs. He wrote the word jihad on the board. And he said that, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen if the Republicans get in. Carter was president at the time. He said this, and he proceeded to tell us about 9/11. He didn't use the date, but the incident.
He described the incident? What did this guy look like?
Well-dressed, medium height, about, I'd guess, between 40 and 30, 45. He told us that that the United States was going to perpetrate it, and everybody kind of looked stone-faced.
How does this relate to UFOs?
Well, he told us about the countries that we were going to take over, and he told us about a dirty bomb. He told us about a war, and I was taking notes. In the end, he started talking about UFOs, and I got them left.
What did he say about UFOs?
He said that the whole scheme about what was going to happen was coming from aliens, and it was coming out. It was going to come out of Texas.
Aliens in Texas, and, huh?
Yes, he said the scheme to make it look like someone else attacked the towers. Are not necessarily the towers. I don't know if they existed at that time, but the
yeah, I understand. The attack that took place eventually on 9/11.
Right, and he told us about two countries. I can't recall what two countries he said, but they were in the area of Iraq in Afghanistan, and then he mentioned a war. And he mentioned some nuclear weapons. He mentioned some dirty bombs, but I'd never heard the word dirty bomb before at the time.
But he said all of this was coming out of, it was Texas. Being masterminded by aliens?
Right, out of Texas.
So is there like an alien base in Texas?
The government was in on it, you know, in cahoots. And, you know, I was, like I say, I was taking notes and
well, did you ever, you know, did you ever contact the FBI about this?
No, I didn't. My wife wouldn't, she told me to forget about that. You're just going to bring a lot of stuff down on your head.
And if you saw this guy again, would you be able to describe him? I mean, to identify him?
It was in 1979.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. If I saw him, I might.
Uh-huh. Well, that's a, I'll tell you what, that is a weird story.
It's true.
I'm not questioning your truthfulness, but that you got to admit, that's got some wild characteristics in it.
I know.
79, and the guy is describing what happened.
Yeah, he says, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. And he says, so when it does happen, you will know that I told you now. And I remember me saying, but you didn't hear it from me.
And did he do what most substitute teachers do? Did he write his name up on the board?
He probably said his name when he came in, but I don't recall.
And you took notes. Do you still have the notes?
No. When he started talking about UFOs, I wadded it up, threw it in the garbage can, and walked out.
Why was that?
Why?
Yeah.
Well, I've known there's some really brilliant professors, but some kind of off the wall ones too. And I he wasn't the teacher.
So you thought he was off the wall? Did you think he was off the wall because he started to talk about UFOs?
Well, I thought he was really strange when he was talking about 9/11 and predicting what was going to happen if the Republicans came into power.
Uh-huh.
But when he started talking about UFOs, then I thought he was nuts.
All right. You said your name's Jason?
Jesse.
Jesse.
Right.
Well, Jesse, I got to tell you, man, the existence of UFOs is one of the best documented facts that exists on the planet. And are you aware of the fact that the U.S. government has admitted officially that they do exist?
My brother-in-law and his uncle saw a UFO some years back. My brother-in-law grew up on a California.
Yeah, but did you know the federal government has admitted officially that they do exist?
I know that the astronaut says he was told at the Pentagon that they exist.
Yeah. Well, the U.S. government published the reports from Project Blue Book, and Project Blue Book, they said, you know, the vast majority of these things we can explain, and there's no problem explaining them, but there's about 5% of them that we cannot explain, and they were the ones with the most data and information. And by saying we cannot explain them, that means they're unidentified and they were in the air. That makes them unidentified flying objects, having been admitted to officially and in writing by the U.S. government in Project Blue Book reports. Jesse, I want to thank you for the call, man. I got to move along. And laissez le bon temps rouler, my friend. All right. The telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, we're headed into a break. The telephone number is 602-539-3316. 602-539-3316. If you have any question or comment for Michael Horn about the Billy Meyer case, we would be delighted to hear from you. We'll be delighted to take your call on the other side of this break. We'll be right back.
get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
K-Pods, the Kevin Smith Show podcast, and take Kevin with you everywhere. Subscribe today at kevinsmithshow.com.
Telephone number is 602-539-3316. We are on final approach, but we have time for one, maybe two more calls if you hurry. 602-539-3316.
All right, Michael, that song that just played, I put it there. I specifically selected that song for that break because of its message. It says, no one's listening. And he runs down a list of all of the evils in society and all the crazy insanity that's on the street, and he says, but no one's listening. And I wonder if you ever feel like singing that song, that no one's listening. No one's paying attention.
Well, I know that there are people that are. My website has been visited by several million people from 137 countries. And I had to look up a lot of them because I didn't know that the countries existed. And that was very heartening because, yes, I mean, there's times you feel like nobody's listening, nobody's paying attention. They have blacklisted the Meyer case from the media for over 30 years. It's the most suppressed story on earth, actually. You know, and that's not an underestimation because, look, if there is a man in Switzerland meeting with extraterrestrials for 66 years and it's been kept suppressed out of the news and all of that, then there's an effective job being keeping people from this knowledge. And I'm one person doing this gig here in the States, and now it doesn't matter anymore. The cat is out of the bag, and other people are passing it on. And, you know, they're finding the material. They're talking to each other about it. So, as Meyer says in our film, it will move like a snowball. It will gather momentum. It will take time. But eventually it grows larger and larger as more and more people will find out about it. The only question I have is, do enough people find out in time, or do we see ourselves, you know, in unnecessarily horrific stuff, you know, to put it mildly. And it's probably delusions of grandeur on my part to think that I can change some of the things that, you know, look so grim. But I've got to try. What else is there to do, you know?
Yeah. Now, I personally am not in possession of all the information you're in possession of. And so I don't have the same passion for it that you have. I'm speculating, you know, but I would speculate based on how I think I would react. If I had been through the hell you've been through, I think I would probably say, hey, you know what, nobody's listening. But you're right in saying that there are a lot of people that are listening, and you just can't focus on the ones that are the detractors. Do you think that, I mean, you're watching this information, and you're watching us produce history day by day that seems to be following the pattern that they warned against. Do you think there's any possibility we're going to turn off of the track we're on and toward the track that they say will lead us to peace and prosperity?
I honestly don't know. I hope, more than anything, that we are going to pull this one all, you know, out of the fire. I really do. And I try to figure every way I know to bring information to people so that they'll look, they'll read, they'll listen, they'll think it through, and if they are moved by it, if they think it's valid, they'll contribute to, you know, this change in direction. But let's also be honest and say there's people that will never hear the Meyer case that are also doing positive things, that recognize that we're in trouble. You know, it doesn't just rest with the Meyer case. As focused on it as I am, there are other people all over the world that in whatever way are, you know, waking up to needing, you know, to act in whatever way that they can through their thoughts and feelings and actions to change things for the positive. And I hope that all of these efforts by everybody, whether they get it from the Meyer case, from their own inspiration, or any other outside source, that we will create a significant enough positive push to slow down the, you know, the incoming wrecking balls and redirect things and create positivity and become sane again, rather than being, you know, led by people that are classically insane and power hungry. We've allowed that. If we don't like these governments, they're reflections of us. And this is where it is everybody's responsibility to start to straighten out their thinking and their actions.
Does Billy give a date for when there is supposed to be a culmination of all of this?
Well, in a sense, and it's going to astound some people, they claim that it will take 700 years before we, the human beings of Earth, fully come into possession of our senses and become true human beings. That means also that we will have extended our lifespans, that we will see through the various belief systems that are not truth but belief, that we will move into an age of knowledge and not belief, that we will cease to be vicious and vindictive and warlike with each other, and it will be that the women, starting in this millennium and in these centuries here, will be the ones who will lead us out of this, not the men. strangely enough, it will be the women that will actually come into power, sufficiently strong in true feminine power, not the imitation of male power, and who will help guide humanity to sanity and peace. The problem is that it may be a very costly transition in the near future, and I'm hoping that it won't be. I'm hoping that there's enough people, through the efforts of people like you, who spread the opportunity around for my voice to be heard and others, that we're going to wake up and catch this in time. And that's my, you know, passionate plea. And can I throw in one other thought? I realize I should do my briefest commercial.
Yes, I want you to.
Okay. The new film is really worth getting, The Silent Revolution of Truth. But if anybody listening goes to They Fly, our website, and I know it's linked from your site, if they go there and they buy anything and just mention that they heard me on your show, we're going to send them a free gift just for the support.
Outstanding.
So much for fraud.
Well, there you go, folks. There you go. The link is right beside Michael's photograph on my website, and it takes you to theyfly.com. And if you order the movie, you get a free gift.
Or a book or anything. You know, anything. Just make sure that we know that you, you know, on the order, you can leave a note for us and just say Kevin Smith, and I'll know. And we'll send you a little something with your order.
Outstanding. Now, how long is this movie?
The movie's full 94 minutes, plus there's 38 more minutes in special features, which include the skeptic session, a whole section from one of the people in Switzerland who explains about the origins of human life in the universe, how far back it goes, and then a section, I didn't mention it, but a section with the only true, the first interstellar songwriting collaboration. I wrote a title song called The Silent Revolution of Truth, and that phrase, that which is the hook of the song, was created by a young woman on the planet Era in the Pleiaren system, and so that's the first collaboration. I didn't get to meet her, as you can imagine, but it's our first interstellar songwriting collaboration, and you can hear the song in there, too, and you're going to be getting, obviously, a copy of all this. We just had short notice, relatively speaking, so...
Yeah, we did. All right, okay. Now, we've only got a minute here, less than a minute. We've got 30 seconds here. Do you have any seminars coming up that you're speaking at or conferences?
Well, there's going to be two MUFON presentations in the greater L.A. area. Those are coming up in October. I will be appearing in Phoenix and in Sedona, Arizona. I believe the dates are right around the 27th and 28th of September. And people can email me through my site. Even though they'll get an autoresponder, I will get back to them. It just takes me a little while.
Well, I hope I can meet you when you're out here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm out in Phoenix.
Sure. All right. That's the end of the show, folks. I wish we had more time, but we don't. And all I can tell you is if you miss a single second of any Kevin Smith show, you're going to miss a universe of information. And we just don't censor it out. You have to think it out. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. You want to stay tuned on the TV channel for Spine Shake Theater. We'll see you tomorrow night. Until then, so long, everybody.